Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this morning. It is Tuesday, the 14th of July. Very nice to have you with us. And it's a kind of a stifling, muggy day, but we will be the breath of fresh air in your daily routine.
That's quite a promise. Yay. You put us on the line here.
Well, we don't have to live up to it. We just have to have to try. Let me introduce our panel to you. A lovely group this morning, and well, they're all lovely, but this is especially lovely, I think. Joining us, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir, to you.
Very nice to have you here. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us each and every Tuesday, and whenever we beg him to fill in for somebody else, he is here today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And, of course, University of Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo this morning.
Hello.
Your university wrote me a letter yesterday thanking me for changing the introduction. They're doing their job.
I have no comment.
They're very nice. Good morning, all. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have a lot to talk about, a lot of issues, and those are the ways that you can reach us. So, of course, the big news, which the president spoke to the nation just moments ago, about an hour and a half ago.
7 o'clock. 90 moments ago.
That's right, 90 moments ago, talked to the nation about the deal in Iran. And this is something that we talked about yesterday that seemed to be nearing. Last night when I was putting the stories together and sending out, there was some concern that it wasn't going to come off. There was some disagreements and concerns. And this morning we wake to the news that happened overnight that there is a deal to curb its nuclear plants. Iran and six world powers have reached this deal. The agreement will lift international oil and financial sanctions in return for limits on Iran's nuclear production capability and fuel stockpile over the next 15 years. The details still have not been released officially yet, but the agreement has been reached. And so, what do you think? Who wants first?
Rosemary should go first because she's our international relations expert.
Oh, I love that. I love that designation. Well, to hear Israeli officials and Lindsey Graham, this is the worst accord ever struck, and you know we're headed towards disaster.
And we would have gotten that no matter what.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Hillary has a lot at stake right now. That will be a very interesting reaction to hear. I think Graham is right about that. It shows her thinking about the Middle East. The biggest problem seems to be that it kind of undoes a ban on arms trading. Aside from nuclear weapons, arms trading would be allowed, although regulated in Iran.
I think you're
many,
right.
Many
I think
opponents
you're right.
seem to think this is a big problem.
In fact, let's face it. Do we really think that at any point Iran was going to drop an A-bomb on anybody? The answer is no, because if they did, they wouldn't be there. That would be the end of them. So, but if what they were able to achieve out of this agreement was a better arms flow for them, in other words, sub-nuclear arms, then, you know, I heard ICBMs this morning and right. other things, then fool us once. You know, I mean, I think that could be very, very bad.
Well, and, you know, Iran is definitely at the heart of wars that we're seeing throughout the region, Syria, Yemen, Iran, the Shia Muslims of Iran are certainly, it's the proxy wars. So it does, there's right to be worried about that, However, I think the deal and the idea that you talk in order to come to some deal and then you change it later is what has been achieved. And that's huge. We haven't talked to Iran in, what is it now, approaching 30 years.
Right.
And that has not led to peace or changed behavior on Iran. Not talking didn't accomplish anything. So I think it's more than time to come up with a deal.
When it comes to what this means for the president, what do you think?
I think it's a victory for the president again. He's had an amazing second term. His first term was all health care and the bailout, of course, and I'm not sure either one of those were perfect, but he's really striking on this one. Congress, of course, has 60 days to go through it and to discover every little possible flaw with it, and I'm sure there are many. So it'll be real interesting to see how he does in the next couple of months.
They don't necessarily – well, they have to vote on it.
Right.
But if they vote to change it or override any of it, he can veto that. Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah.
And so he doesn't need – you know, he only needs, what, 34 votes or something
like
that.
Yeah, the idea, though, is that he has to put something in place that will last into the next administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat. And if he's vetoing and pushing it through despite massive congressional disapproval, it's not going to hold.
Well, the real test of how this plays out, should it be approved by Congress and should it actually, you know,
survive.
Go into effect and survive, we won't know for years, probably.
Right. That's true.
Looking back. And one analysis I heard today, which I think was interesting, is he's betting on a future Iran being much different than the current Iran. And the millennials in Iran are very different than the Ayatollahs that control it. And there's some speculation that it's a much more Western-aimed country and it's a very sophisticated country, and they're not going to want to
turn back time.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So how old is that Ayatollah? Do we know? I think that's pretty important.
I don't know, but he's old.
He looks old.
I think this is also a big victory for John Kerry. I have to say, you know I'm a Hillary supporter, but this is an accomplishment that kind of dwarfs anything she really did during her time. She traveled a lot. He's got a major agreement with an enemy of the United States. That's a pretty big deal.
And boy, talk about putting a lot of time in.
Yeah.
You just every time you saw a picture there, he is at the end of the table.
And on his crutches.
That's right.
Very sympathetic. He looked more sympathetic, at least from Italy he did, than I have ever seen him before. There was a sort of arrogance about the guy and a sort of cockiness. But I think you're right. This really was a big victory for him.
Does he have a political future?
Yeah, he can run for president.
Oh, wait, he did, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
He tried that once. Let's take a break. We'll come back, talk about other issues as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If you'd like to weigh in, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after the short break.
Support comes from the Open Studio Tour, a self-guided tour featuring 16 artists in their working studios throughout Washington County, featuring paintings, sculptures, ceramics, photography, and more. This Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 6, studiotour.org for MAP. Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York, Dr. Susan Boja and Cara Bedour, providing audiological and hearing healthcare services in a patient-focused environment. HearingBest.com. Bethel Woods Center for the Arts presenting Neil Young with Promise of the Real and Puss in Boots, Friday, July 17th, BethelWoodsCenter.org. And Hudson Valley Goldsmith New Paltz, specializing in custom design fine jewelry made with conflict-free diamonds and recycled gold. Vintage jewelry and the work of over 20 artists. Custom work in an open studio. HudsonValleyGoldsmith.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We want to get – do we have any letters, Alan? Do you have any?
There was a letter from Robert. It was over the budget. But, panel, I know that Iran-Israel will probably occupy most of today's discussion, but Walker's latest moves to destroy Wisconsin's middle and working classes, in other words, his signing of a budget taking away workers' right to a living wage and in return giving the right to work 7 days a week if they agreed to in writing, are worth a moment. They are the harbinger of what a Republican presidential win will mean for the whole country. This cannot be just seen as long shots desperate grab for attention, as a long shots desperate grab for attention. By the way, he ain't so long.
Yeah.
He's doing very well in the polls.
I think he's one to watch. I really do.
Yeah. When Jeb is calling for Americans to work longer hours, rather they are the GOP's answer to the income inequality issue the Dems are using so effectively to bash them with. And Rich says, filmmaker Joe Gibbons is going to jail for robbing a bank in New York City. Can that film be used in his work when he leaves prison? Will he use his prison experiences in the film? No doubt it will be New Jack on film.
Why are we? What is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
It just showed up and I read it.
be careful what we send them.
Did I say something bad?
Was
it bad? Nope. I don't know.
It was a non-sequential conversation.
No, it wasn't. Okay. He can't write any more letters and I can't read them. Okay.
All right. So let's talk about the Scott Walker campaign in the couple minutes that we have. One of the last in, maybe, I don't know. Was it 15? Number 15, I believe.
16.
Is it 16? Yeah. All right.
Once you guess past 10, it doesn't matter.
We were watching TV last night, my wife and I, and I said, I wonder if I can name all 16. And I took a piece
of
paper and tried to name all 16, and I left off Chris Christie somehow.
America's newest parlor game. Name all the Republicans who have announced.
I forgot Carson.
I don't want to sound arrogant or anything, but only one of us in this room has written a book about Wisconsin politics. Yes, it was a long time ago.
Wisconsin politics evolved since the time that you cataloged it.
I don't think they have. It's interesting because, you know, the left is very strong in Wisconsin, and so is the right, who having produced people like Joe McCarthy and you know, some of the other guys, all of whom played prominent parts in the Nixon administration years after I wrote my book. But it is a competitive state. What I find interesting is what happened to the unions in Wisconsin. You know, and that, I think, if we want to be honest on this panel, has to bring us to a discussion of what union power in this country means. Unions are not what they once were. And if you take a look at public opinion and other kinds of things, you see that somehow, somewhere along the line, the people who did so much for all of us, so that we have weekends and off and we have living wages, and somehow managed to get themselves into an unpopular position. And Wisconsin is sort of the bellwether of what happened there. So I think the fact that he took them on there and won, and with middle-class voters making that decision and the recall and everything else, I think that it means you can extrapolate that to what's going to happen in the presidential election this time, what the power of unions are going to be to bring things over. And I think that's an important subject for people to discuss, although not very popular.
Will they make it a referendum on unionization or on the middle class or on income inequality? I mean, you know, all of them are connected. Some people don't automatically connect the power or the rise or the fall of unions in the U.S. with the rise and fall of the middle class. But others say that's exactly what's going on here.
And
the guy has zero foreign policy experience, even compared dealing to ISIS to dealing with unions. Give me a break. He wants to gut the University of Wisconsin,
The Republicans, by the way, always do. When I was out there, it was holy hell, the fight between the Daily Cardinal and the speaker, right-wing speaker, would get up and they would wave the latest edition of the college paper around and say, this is disgraceful.
He was also at the heart of an effort last week to pass a sweeping shutdown of government records in the executive and the legislative branch. What he portends for national politics, I find frightening.
Well, the profiles that have been written about him today and, you know, prepared for his announcement really show him to be an incredibly ambitious political, you know, strategist. I mean, it's almost frightening when someone is that, you know, ambitious, trying to move his way up.
Yeah,
that driven for power, not to use the power.
Not,
you know, there's
do
one
good
thing, right? It's to get the power. And he was a Ronald Reagan fanatic when he was in high school, and he, in fact, his wedding day was on Ronald Reagan's birthday. Maybe by coincidence, but that doesn't seem like that.
I would point out that Ronald Reagan is one of the most popular presidents in the history of this country.
But if you take the things that Ronald Reagan did and you say, and you didn't attach his name to him, a lot of the conservatives today would diss that. You know, he raised taxes. He built government. He did bust unions. He busted the air traffic controllers union.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walker's exactly my age, so that makes me feel very insignificant. I don't like when guys of my age are running for president. I feel like they should be older.
First you're dentist, then you're doctor, then your president is younger than
you. When the police are little children running around.
Yeah, that's right. I like them older.
I think we should start at 70.
I agree with you. I don't feel someone my age is
as voters we routinely reject experience.
We say they're
insiders. We need change and new ideas. Oh, I hate that. I agree with you about experience.
Well, how old was President Obama? He was in
42,
his
42.
Right?
Yeah,
it was early 40s.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back and continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, Rosemary, and Mike are all here. We welcome your input. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We're ready for you. We're ready for your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. Do you have any to share with us, Alan, as Exhibit A?
I do, and I'm trying to stay a few sentences ahead.
All right.
Okay, so here we go. We heard from Steve in Wilton. I never liked or respected unions. I am currently looking for a new job. There is a two-tiered system. New hires get paid low wages and get no benefits. Based on seniority, someday I could move into a union position with benefits and a higher pay. This does not seem right. I've also encountered age discrimination. They can't ask age, but they ask what year I graduated from high school. Just do the math. That's from Steve.
All right. Vote for Scott Walker.
Well,
unions don't
have the power that they used to have. And what's one of the concessions they have made to allow entry-level people to come in at a lower rate than the established mm-hmm. folks? And that's,
well, Rosemary, you've been very critical about Bill Cosby, mm-hmm. right? So when we get a letter that runs... By the way,
you heard Senator Gillibrand has taken on an effort to remove the presidential medal from Bill Cosby. It's given for people who have made major contributions.
Right.
To,
it was given by
case,
President
George W.
Bush 7 or 8, 9 years ago.
But the contention is that he got it under false pretenses. And can you? It's an interesting question because the cultural contributions remain. He is a great entertainer. He also may have or appears to have raped upward of 45 people. So does he deserve
the
medal?
Well, the Associated Press story last week, which we talked about here, that revealed some what were previously sealed depositions. He basically admitted it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I said that to you because I think this letter may be unfair, but I'm going to read it. From Janet. It says, I realize this is late, but last week during the discussion concerning Bill Cosby, Rosemary said that Bill Cosby could have had any woman he wanted. Usually, Rosemary is a staunch opponent of women being stereotyped. However, by making this comment, she's validating the myth that women are unable to resist a popular famous man. Surely some of us, if not the majority, would have been able to resist his charm.
Okay, that's like really taking what I said out of context.
I
was talking about whatever was wrong with him as something that we really need to confront as a society because he was a man who had so much to offer. He could indeed have got it. Wasn't just his looks. He's rich. He's famous. He's immensely
charismatic.
So why would a man like that get a thrill out of drugging? I mean, it's not even the rape. It was the drugging and exploiting of women. Illness I was talking about, not that women can't resist.
Gotcha.
No, you're wrong about that.
Gotcha. Okay, that's fine. Okay, so MCLA or SUNY is the question from Philip, who wants to know, the target of the latest Massachusetts bomber that was arrested yesterday, we don't know, but it was we heard that it was an out-of-state, they said it was an out-of-state school. You know what we're talking about?
No,
okay,
I
in
don't.
Adams, Massachusetts. A police captain from Boston had indicated that his son was off the edge and was taking on the jihadist persona. The FBI tracked him. He got some guns in the mail, and he was arrested, promptly arrested. The information we got was that he was planning, and he had bought in the Walmart a pressure cooker, which was the same thing that was used
the
by
bombs
the,
in
the
bomb, Boston.
In the Boston,
Boston
Marathon.
Right.
And then the other information we got, and that's all we got, was that he planned to bomb and shoot students in an out-of-state school.
Wow.
Well, out of state of Massachusetts could be SUNY, where you teach.
It could be right over the border in New York. Yeah. Lots of schools. There's dozens around here.
He was arrested on the 4th of July in Adams after allegedly receiving four firearms from the FBI witness. He remains in custody. A detention hearing is being held today.
Wow. Well, I guess he would fit the definition of a lone wolf. I mean, it seemed like he was acting on his own volition. But mm-hmm. but persuaded perhaps by the rhetoric that's on websites, jihadist websites.
All right, let's go on to other topics and talk about what else is making news this morning. And 1 second for my screen to refresh. Here we go. I hope yours is doing better than mine.
Oh, there is another letter.
Oh, good.
Did you
well, that'll,
want it?
That'll give me some traveling
okay,
music
sure.
time. Sure.
Okay. Jackie Gleason used to say some traveling music?
Yes.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. But of course, who's Jackie Gleason? They're going to people say, okay.
And
thank
away
you,
we
panel
go.
And Olivia. I would like to say thank you
the
to Libby,
Network.
Who I know is not part of the panel today. I think she said it best by describing the GOP race as a Republican clown car. Every few seconds, it seems like another candidate pops out.
Yes. That's Libby. Great metaphor. I don't think there's a clown car big enough for all the Republicans.
No, that's there's a lot there.
I always wondered how they do that in the circus. You know, the car stops, and then, you know, 50 people get out of the little car.
There's a hole in the floor, right?
That's right. It's got to be a hole in the floor, right?
Right.
You need to be particularly agile.
So in this case, there would be a hole in the Republican platform?
Ooh.
Nice. So, Joe, what are we talking about?
New York City reached a settlement with the family of Eric Garner on Monday. Agreeing to pay $5.9 million to resolve a wrongful death claim over his killing by the police on Staten Island last July, the city controller and a lawyer for the family made the announcement yesterday. The agreement, reached a few days before the anniversary of Mr. Garner's death, headed off one legal battle even as a federal inquiry into the killing and several others at the state and local level remain open and could provide a further accounting of how he died.
Yeah, it was a horrible death. I think they actually deserved more. They originally asked for $75 million, so this was a settlement that helps the state. I hate that we have to pay it, we the taxpayers, rather than the police officers and the particular man who did this.
Well,
I would
like
to have seen him held accountable.
Yeah, as you know, New York City has this new philosophy, which is you pay off early. So that, and that's what they're doing
these long drawn out
with these potential lawsuits, and you just pay them off. I have questions about that because in some cases, I think this is a pretty good one. I think a jury was going to find against the city.
Absolutely.
Against the police.
But let me ask you this, a more philosophical question.
Sure.
When you have a death like this, and many would regard this as a wrongful death, we all witnessed the videos of him being choked by police officer and asking, saying he can't breathe.
Right.
So in a case like this, when there's a settlement, $5 million, $6 million, whatever. Is that justice? I mean, does that amount to justice? Because the grand jury in Staten Island refused to indict the police officers who arrested Mr. Garner and ultimately caused his death. And yet the death certificate said it was a homicide. The medical examiner called it a homicide. So it didn't get resolved. And now the city and the taxpayers have to pony up quite a bit of money. Is that an admission that was wrong when they paid this?
Sure,
kind of
seems that way to me.
But is that justice? Is that
An interesting question. It's an interesting question. The other interesting question is, do you ever have let's face it, the mayor de Blasio has led a sort of left of center coalition to get elected, right?
Yeah.
And part of that platform has been anti-police. It has. The police are given too much credit and all the rest. So the mayor gives orders. When we get these kinds of cases, we're going to settle. We're going to settle on these cases. But your point about the grand jury was profound, because juries and grand juries don't like to indict cops no matter how guilty they are. And that is, or even convict them. So by getting out in front and saying, okay, our decision is to pay off on this, there is a nod, a tip of the hat to the coalition that put this guy into office. I think to some degree, there is some of the same thing here in Albany, where Kathy Sheehan was put together a coalition. I think, I was talking to somebody this morning, I think it's probably why Jerry Jennings didn't run again, because the long-term mayor, because he knew that this coalition had now come into its own. And it is, I think, so that the justice question is fine, but what really is happening here is that somebody is paying off their constituency for support.
Well, it also becomes an alternate way of acknowledging wrongdoing, which is what a settlement is in a lawsuit, and it's a way to, De Blasio's administration essentially doesn't accept what the grand jury found, and they're brokering a alternate plan with the family of the deceased. By doing that, they're kind of perhaps dissing the whole process by which the police were exonerated in this case.
And by the way, that while family gets the money, there are members of the family who are quoted all over the paper this morning as saying, this is terrible. In other words, we didn't take the money.
Yeah.
This is, as you've put it before, not justice.
Yeah. The interesting element of this is last week, after having been unable to get any reform in this issue through this Republican state Senate, Governor Cuomo issued an executive order that for the time being, for at least a year, he has authorized the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, to step in cases where police are involved in the deaths of civilians, unarmed civilians, and it would be a case like this, and conduct his own inquest. And yesterday, coincidentally, the same day that this settlement was announced, the State Association of District Attorneys came out and blasted that executive order by the governor. They're saying that the attorney general and the governor do not have the resources or the know-how to handle these cases. They're sympathetic to the fact that they're doing it for families, but they say that they really don't have a realistic understanding, and the right place to investigate this is at the local DA level.
Well, the problem with that one, and I hear you, Mike, I think you make great sense, but with the objections. Now, remember, there's a little history here. I believe Eric Schneiderman wanted that power a long time ago, and the governor
indeed.
Said absolutely not, because they were seen as sort of political rivals. But now Cuomo sees it as a good thing to do to sort of get everything off his back, and he moves on and he gives. But we do know what the problem with district attorneys are, and I'm going to announce it right here. I love our district attorney here I think he's got real guts in Albany. But
David Soares,
yeah. Yes. But what happens is that the DAs have to work with the police. If the police don't cooperate with the DAs, nobody's ever going to get arrested. Nobody's ever going to get a conviction. So therefore, if you give it to an outside party, like redistricting, I know it's a bit of a stretch, to say somebody outside the system ought to be doing it, you have a better shot at attaining the very justice you've been talking about.
Well, the governor.
Let me ask this, because I want you to answer the question, Mike. I just love the idea in this criticism that if it's in charge, if the investigation is under the charge of the attorney general, the local DA can't participate. He's cut out. Is that necessarily so?
I don't think it automatically is. I think it gives I think it takes the immediate inquest away from. He can exercise this authority, and he has some level of judgment in it. That it's not always. Or, every single case.
But it's seen as a competition rather than giving extra
power. Well, the governor describes it, and I think the Eric Garner case really demonstrates it, is there's a lack of public trust when it's handled at the local level.
Right.
And there's questions that are raised about it. It doesn't mean that they reached the wrong conclusion. All it means is that the public does not trust the conclusion. And by taking it away from the local DA, you relieve them of that appearance of a conflict, so that when the attorney general does his own inquest, it has at least a level of authentic objectivity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but this is the same governor who, following along with what you've said about lack of trust, refused to veto that terrible bill, and I've said it 1,000 times, which he ran on the first time, that he would have an outside group drawing the line so that these guys, guys is the right word, couldn't draw their own damn
lines. You're
talking
about the redistricting
plan
that he caved in on.
So
Governor Cuomo caved in on his
campaign
promise. And
you know why he did that. He did that because he likes having the Republicans in power.
Well, that's certainly the widespread belief that he's taking steps to keep the Republicans in charge of the state Senate.
I said it first when nobody else was saying it.
Well, everyone's agreeing with you now, Alan. Just accept that.
I find that hard to do.
Let's take a break. We'll all accept that. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back and discover more stories. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Dorset Theater Festival, presenting Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Jersey Lily, in a Baker Street tale of intrigue and wit at the Dorset Playhouse through July 25th. DorsetTheaterFestival.org. Audio Video Corporation, offering design and integration services for the boardroom, the conference room, and the classroom since 1946. AudioVideoCorp.com. Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features, Sunwood-Builders.com. And Woodstock Farm Sanctuary, announcing a new location in High Falls with a reopening celebration on Saturday, September 5th, with food vendors, live music, tours, and rescued animals. WoodstockSanctuary.org.
Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable. Welcome back. And our final segment this morning, we have a couple other subjects to discuss, so we will do that right now. Let's go to the story about transgender in the military. The Pentagon moving to allow transgender people to serve openly in the military. This coming yesterday from Defense Secretary Ashton Carter. Pentagon officials are to spend the coming months working out the administrative and legal changes needed to remove one of the final barriers to all Americans serving in the military. If realized, the plan would end what it seems to be one of the last discriminatory rules about who can enlist or be commissioned in the American military.
I was hoping we would not get to this story. I have a decidedly non-PC reaction to it, which is there are 0.2% of the population in the United States is transgender. That's like 700,000 people.
Can we have a definition of transgender here?
People who identify maybe differently than their biological gender?
As far as,
okay.
Know. Men who believe that they are women or women who believe that they are men. Mm-hmm. So 700,000 total population, a much smaller percentage would actually be in the military. There are more redheads than there are transgendered people in the United States. So why is this issue getting so much attention? Why are we fascinated with it? Did Laverne Cox do this? Did Orange is the New Black bring this about? And I do understand the role of the military in showing the way to non-discrimination. I do understand that. I think it's important. I'm kind of glad it happened. But why this is major news kind of annoys me. Why aren't we spending more time on women discrimination? There's 51% of us, and we are not getting the attention. 53. You're right. It's gone up. We're not getting this sort of attention. So I have sort of a really, I was annoyed when I read the
story. Well, two wrongs never make a right, so you can't say that just because...
Yeah, it's not the transgendered people's fault.
There's a greater discrimination against women in the military.
One would wonder what you would hear from the people... I agree with you. This is... You can't fight the fact that philosophically it's correct to do this.
Correct.
Yeah, but one wonders, you have an army in the field, and you know... There can't be any distractions. But we said that, of course, about blacks fighting
right.
until Harry Truman integrated the army. So it's very.
I resent the incredibly high level attention this is getting. This is the.
Well, there's an estimate that 15,000 people in the military are transgender, and transgender is a new. Group that is getting the recognition and the equality that it had been denied for decades. It's not like we've achieved it with everybody else, but it is a group that, and perhaps it is exactly what you said, movie or TV shows like Orange is the New Black and Bruce Jenner changing his gender to, Caitlyn Jenner. And, it's currently an issue, and it's natural that would get attention.
It's pretty funny. My name is Rosemary. My middle name is Christine. That was supposed to be my real name. But when I was born, George Jurgensen had the first widely publicized sex change operation, and my parents were so ashamed they would not give me the name Christine. So I find it really, in my lifetime now, we've come to the point where, Christine Jorgensen could have served in the military.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I understand your point completely. But in reading the article last night, it seemed to me, and maybe it was just the way it was written, the way it was presented, but it seemed to me that it was the military looking at the situation and saying that we are still discriminating against this group. And it was more, I don't want to belittle it to a bookkeeping error, but sort of saying, this is what we need to do to make the military non-discriminatory.
Okay, I'm not sure if that makes me feel better, because can't I say the same thing about women? We let women in. If they want to serve and they can, qualify, they can
yes,
go
but
in,
I think,
but
I
they're
agree
not
with
protected.
You. I agree with you. But then look at the enlistment and then...
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And then understanding what the overall problems are there.
Just because one particular group is not finding justice and equality, it doesn't mean we shouldn't work for other groups.
No.
I understand.
That's what Alan said at the beginning. I do agree with that.
All right. Let's, now that we're all agreeing, let me get to another topic.
Yeah. Let's disagree about
something.
That's about time we fight.
That's we did have a letter from Deanne who said, today's panel is a great combination.
Of what?
Let's just stop right there.
I think it's a great combination.
Combination.
It's a good combination.
As Danny Kaye used to sing, great combination suit of underwear. He wore it 9 months without a single tear. He wore it 9 months without exaggeration. But when he tried to get it off, he forgot the combination.
Okay, Joe, you have to translate again. He's speaking old to us.
No, it's Danny Kaye. It's classic.
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 Yeah,
man
classic.
Bought
a combination suit of underwear. Don't you get it? Yeah. Don't you see?
And finally, let us talk about, we only have 2 or 3 minutes left. We of course spoke... with a little dose of Danny Kaye, we have the story about the deal in Greece, which we talked about at length yesterday. But now we're starting to see the backlash amongst the Greek people.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be as difficult for the Greek people to accept in the campaign that the government has to wage as it will be for our Congress to accept the Iran nuclear deal. I mean, they just voted against it last week. Right. They came out just a week ago and he walks firmly into the negotiations and says, that's where we are, and walks right back out and says, okay.
Yeah, it's
we'll go back and try one more time.
It's weird. Now, look, the Greek people are really suffering now. There's no two ways about it. When we were there, there are all kinds of signs of that happening. And now it's going to get worse. And these are wonderful people. It's a wonderful country. And I hate to see it happening, especially at the hands of the Germans.
Yeah, well, it gets to the whole issue about austerity and whether you can. Rosemary, you said it, I think, a week ago that, you know, people look at a government and say, well, it's like the household budget. You got to stay within your means. That's
no,
exactly
you really
not
don't.
The case.
Yeah,
but you do have to pay your taxes. And that's a big
right.
problem.
Right. I mean, there are cultural changes that have to take place. But Paul Krugman.
Paul Krugman had a great
right.
column. And
1 minute, by the way.
1 minute. Okay, so I'll talk fast and you can have a turn, too. I mean, Greece to change its pension system and pay taxes, that's great. But we're talking now about selling off runes, selling off islands. That's their legacy they're giving away. Also, the German finance minister is also in trouble because he's been so vicious against them. There's calls for his leaving as well.
Yeah, Krugman said, the truth is that Europe's self-styled technocrats are like medieval doctors who insisted on bleeding their patients.
I
and when
this.
Their treatment made the patients sicker, they demanded more bleeding.
That's what the German finance minister is in trouble for.
Deanne wanted to just clarify. I know we got to get out of here, but she said, "I like the combination of people on the panel today." Well, I think we got that. We understood that.
Combination.
Suit
All right.
Of, suit of underwear.
Danny Kaye.
And with that, we thank you all, and we'll see you soon. Alan and Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow. Mike, soon?
See you soon.
Yes, absolutely. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.